in 2018 when the Warriors swept them. I don't know where he's at now. I mean, again, it's 3 years later. It's not like that was a year ago or a couple of months ago. But I think it's more likely, though, Dibs, that he's just an extra body that can be trusted in an emergency-type situation.
I believe he's played 60 minutes this year of NBA basketball. Five games was the total that he was able to put up. So I don't know what kind of a wind he has, what kind of fitness and shape, his body, how much it could endure. I can't see him. Like tonight, if you really want to lean on him, if you're not going to play Steph and Draymond and Kevon, and we don't know yet how they're going to approach tonight's somewhat meaningless game, but even if you wanted to ramp him up, you can't go out and play him 36 minutes, I don't think, straight off the street.
No, I don't think so either. And also, Dibs, where does Pascal fit in here? Because he's the guy I think could be basically left out entirely unless it's garbage time minutes, believe it or not. I think he's just not going to be a factor, Dibs, from this point on.
Well, tonight's a good night, too, if he does, in fact, go. And I know he's listed as probable. JD had the injury report. But tonight's a night you could get him 25 minutes, you know, maybe even 28 minutes, and see where is he physically and how can he help you. Maybe in a short stint, if the matchup is right, if you need somebody to come in and, you know, present some size and a body and maybe commit a couple of fouls to take pressure off Draymond, there's a role. It's probably a 4 to 6 minute role. But I think that having him able at least gives you possibly a piece to throw in there real quick.
Yeah, maybe you need a little infusion of scoring. You want to put the ball in his hands and let him try and attack and get a couple of buckets against maybe an inferior defensive team in an emergency spot. To me, it's more depth. I think that's one of the fascinating parts, Steiny, as far as what the Warriors are going to do because of what's been successful these last couple of weeks. It's basically been eight. And I know, you know, Damian Lee was a part of it initially, and Oubre's in and out as a part of it. But they've won with this eight. And right. I think in a perfect world, you'd maybe want to add another piece or two, but at what cost and for how long? You know, do you add? Like, if Damian Lee all of a sudden can play in a playoff series, is he playing 10 minutes? Is he playing 12 minutes? Are you looking for more there? Like, in some ways, I think the Warriors are almost obligated to continue to roll with this same group and same, you know, minute distribution that they've had over this last month.
Yeah. Where are we with Oubre right now? Do you think, as the team essentially, do they think he's done?
He's supposed to get reevaluated today, I believe. So I think it was a week ago that it was announced that there would be a further update maybe today. But there had been no Dibs determination as to whether his season was going to be over. It was stated that he didn't need surgery. So I think we'll get a better feel of the timeline maybe today.
Shooting hand, ligament issue. It's been now, 3 weeks since we've seen him? Three coming up on four. I can't imagine he materializes back on the floor for this team, even if they get into a series, which is a whole week, as we know.
Yeah.
I just don't get the feeling. I don't get the same feeling like he's clamoring, he's fighting to get back. There haven't been enough reports of his rehab to me that have indicated that he's close.
You know what? We put the rat on the table yesterday. When it comes to Oubre, I wonder if they really want him back and available right now. I mean, I know in theory it's, of course, but like JD said, they found something with these eight guys. And if he's available, is he a monkey wrench or an asset at this point?
I think he could be an asset. I do. It's just how many minutes and with who. Like, to me, he wouldn't be a 20, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. He wouldn't be a 25-minute guy necessarily unless you put him in for six and he was just playing so well that you left him out there for 12 and then maybe gave him another run in the second half and he was playing exceptionally well. Like, to me, even if it was stated as unlikely as it is that he's going, you know, if he was available in the play-in games, basically, to me, it would still be probably in that 12 to 15 minute range tops until he proved that he didn't, that he didn't basically hinder that momentum, Steiny, that this team has built up.
Dibs, he ain't going to like, I mean, if he says he's ready, he ain't going to like 12 minutes at all, I don't think.
Well, has he ever played in a playoff game? What does he have? One series, I think, career?
I think one in the playoffs? Washington.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah. And so, you know, if you're not just totally dying to be a part of this group or dying to get into the playoffs and you got a bum wrist, then why risk it? You know, he's looking for that bag alert, that major bag alert, Steiny, that you know every time his name pops up, if you're not hearing this song, alert, major bag alert, you're doing it wrong because he's got a bag alert coming. And so if your wrist isn't 100% and you're not fitting great with this team and they're winning without you, why not just, you know, stay dressed up in row two?
Well, here's one for you guys. Does it help or hurt Oubre not playing? Like, to me, like, does he need to be playing? Or if he's only going to play 12, does it, for, you know, and I guess this is what you're saying, Dibs, if he's only going to play 12, it's maybe better for him to just not play at all versus needing to play enough to where maybe other teams say, oh, he can make an impact, we want to pay him. I think he's in a tough spot.
Well, what are the optics if you're another team and you don't play because you're injured, or you don't play because you're healthy and coach is giving you 14 minutes, and instead you're getting beat out by Juan Toscano-Anderson, no disrespect, but a guy, you know, undrafted, uncontracted before yesterday. Michael Mulder's playing more than you. A journeyman Bazemore. Why do I want to give you $15 million a year and a major bag alert if you can't even crack that rotation in a play-in game?
Yeah, and Dibs, great usage of the U2 song when talking about Oubre. Winning without you.
Nice.
Remember that one? I know, it's with or without.
Boy.
Yeah, that was rough. JD, I've been taking a lot of chances this week. JD, by the way, I've put my singing voice on the line, and it hasn't gone particularly well.
A lot of left-handed Steph Curry passes this week. It's pretty when it works. Whatever, when he goes with a one-handed lefty throw, it's like, oh, that was a dime. Or it's like, oh, God, why'd you throw that?
Can I be all apologies?
That was a dime.
It speaks to the popularity of U2, though, that Steiny actually knew the words of the one he just referenced.
Thank you.
True.
Thank you with another backhanded compliment. I appreciate that.
It's a Federer.
That's
what a backhanded compliment is. It's a Federer.
Yeah.
Usually up the line if possible.
It's usually a winner, isn't it?
It has to be a winner.
Yeah.
It has to be a winner.
Hey, you know what? The one thing, and just have a minute or two to talk about this, because we brought up the Knicks in last night in our league. And tell me, we were talking about Curry and the Warriors and legacy, and everyone's like, oh, Curry's legacy's set. It's set. Nothing matters. He's going to go down as one of the greats. All that's true. There's no doubt all that's true. But my point has always been, you can add to your legacy in non-championship years. And the analogy I'm going to make is like with a guy like Tom Thibodeau. He was being talked about like kind of, not a joke, but not nearly as good of a coach as he really is. And so you look at a guy like Thibodeau, Dibs, and what he's now doing with the Knicks, this is going to elevate him as a coach and his reputation.
Is it Thibodeau or is it Thibodeau? Because if it's Thibodeau, then it has to be Coach Thibs when we refer to him. And I have this problem with Adrian Wojnarowski, who goes by Woj. If it's not Wojnarowski, and it's not, if it's Wojnarowski, then you should be Woj. JD, please explain.
Yeah, I don't have the explanation, but Tibbs, it's Tibbs, and then it's Thibodeau.
No, it's not.
He goes with the offset.
He's not in the Migos, and he's not Quavo or Offset.
I think I have the official answer to not only the pronunciation of the Knicks coach, but I also have the correct pronunciation of basketball's greatest insider. And I'm going to share that with you on the other side on 95.7 The Game.
You're listening to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs, featuring John.
That's a problem.
Dickinson.
All righty. Daryl the Guru Johnson, he's out. He's going to be back Monday. He's got some family stuff to take care of. But a lot of people have been wondering about the Goo, and he's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, he's just got to take care of a few things.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
That makes me not look forward to having him come back. That's one of my least favorite of the Goo drops, and it might be the only one I'm not crazy about because he's got the best drops, no doubt. Before the break, we're going to talk about pronunciation of two important names. Yeah, Dibs, I mean, and notice I said Dibs, not Thibs. Dibs, Tom Thibodeau, even though his nickname is Tibbs, it's just chalked up as an outlier. You know what I'm saying? It's Thibodeau, but I get the sense he doesn't mind if you call him Thibodeau, but those in the know, they call him Thibodeau.
Right. I have no problem with the pronunciation of his last name. It's the bastardization that comes with his nickname not being Coach Thibs. Now, Eric Hasseltine, joining us later today, that, again, is an individual preference. He can decide which way he wants it to be pronounced. But, you know, he can't have his nickname be Hasty because it's not Hasseltine, it's Hasseltine. There are rules.
Well, which is?
JD, okay. John Dickinson's nickname is JD. His nickname cannot be LD. His name's not Len Dickinson, although that's kind of a cool name. Hi, Len Dickinson. Private eye.
Lenny. But
totally. Can I call you Len from now on, LD? I mean, I got no problem with JD. You and I go back a decade, but you strike me as a Len.
All on the
Kyle,
table.
Kyle, what do you think about Len Dickinson?
I think JD Len Dickinson is great.
There you go.
Jalen? Everybody's named Jalen now.
JD Len. Like. Yeah, JD Len.
Speaking of Eric Hasseltine, he's the play-by-play voice of the Memphis Grizzlies radio broadcast team. He's joining us in 10 minutes. And I'll be honest, do we know that it's Hasseltine?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But does he respond to Hasseltine is the question.
And will he correct Hasseltine?
Boy, that's a great question.
I don't like to do that. You know what? You know how I feel about names, Kyle. I try to pronounce people's names correctly because I think it could be construed as a sign of disrespect if you pronounce it wrong.
Right, you are a linguist in that way. I know it's Hasseltine, one, because I know that's what it is, but two, he called me before the show, and when he called me, he identified himself as Eric Hasseltine. So
fair,
that
fair
has
enough.
Confirmed the pronunciation.
Who's Miguel Cabrera?
From yesterday's Jeopardy, JD, where it was a question about a former MVP, and this was his answer.
Who's Miguel Cabrera? That's right. You would have given
me
credit
there,
for that.
What name are you hearing? Miguel?
I heard Cabrera.
They said it was Cabrero. They were like,
you said Cabrera.
You said Miguel Cabrero. Who's Miguel Cabrera?
I don't know. There's a cut there. I think that one counts.
The funny thing, JD, that thing wasn't cut. Believe it or not, I think I did get to the end and was like, yeah, Cabrera.
Yeah.
You know how I can do that? Oh, Miguel Cabrera. Yeah. But anyway, it counted.
Anyway,
lost,
he takes pride in saying people's names right is the whole upshot of why that got played.
There you go. And now we move to the – biggest NBA insider of all time, and his first name is Adrian. So I'm going back, guys, to July 2nd, 2018, and I said to Adrian in a direct message with a guy with millions and millions of followers, we can direct message sometime, and I asked him, Adrian, hope you're well. Hey, can you ensure that I'm saying your last name correctly. I've always said it Wojnarowski. Is that correct? He wrote back, hey, Matt, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Hope you're well. Wojnarowski is the way he would like it pronounced. Wojnarowski, despite the fact there's no R in there, but that's from the horse's mouth. Wojnarowski. There you go.
Fine. And again, I have no problem with him correcting people's pronunciation of his last name. How is your nickname Woj? It should be Worge, which, by the way, is a lot cooler than Woj. If you're a Worge, I mean, you sound like a mythical three-horned badass, quite frankly. What up, Worge? So I'm just curious as to why don't we correct the nickname?
I don't know. Where's
because
the R?
It's based on a mispronunciation sensation.
Where's the R?
I take you back to, well, it's the Polish pronunciation of language.
Gotcha. And
I take you back to my earlier example about why JD's nickname is not LD, although it is now Len Dickinson, Private Eye.
All you want is consistency, Dibs. All you want is, you pick whatever the name is, and the nickname has to match it.
Wardell Stephen Curry goes by Stephen, and his nickname is Steph. That makes perfect sense to me. His nickname's not Jim.
So you just shut your yapper.
I guess it works. Well, Draymond, Dre. Jim.
Another great example. Jim Kozimor, as we talk about great Poles, also Polish, his nickname is Koz. Kozimor, Koz. I get it.
But why isn't it Korzimor then?
That's a great question.
Apparently, you can just throw a stray R in those names, and it's all good.
I think it depends on your proximity to Warsaw growing up.
Nice. But, you know, that's a conventional R in that.
Steiner?
Lorenzo.
You throw a random O or R in.
Yeah, good call, Kyle. You're brilliant, no doubt about it. Eric Hasseltine coming up in 5 minutes. Memphis play-by-play man on the radio. We got to find out about Memphis. We don't know a lot about Memphis. Well, I shouldn't speak for you guys, but there's a lot to learn about the Memphis Grizzlies and the Warriors maybe playing them in two monster games coming up. Before we get to Hasseltine, I have to bring this up because it was pretty funny. I think I threw it on the text thread last night. Did you see Udonis Haslam? Hadn't played all year long. Played in a game last night and was ejected after 3 minutes. He had a 3-minute season with an ejection. Is that something, Dibs, that you praise or condemn?
That is whack.
Depends on what goes along with it. Did he need to play a game in order to get some sort of a credit for a year played or to get fully paid on his salary? There has to be more to it than just the guy. What, he went out there and got mad at the refs, or how did he get ejected?
Dwight Howard. Well, he got into it with Dwight Howard.
Okay.
Yeah, and for me, that's what makes it acceptable. Like if you just went out there and argued with the ref, Dibs, to me that would be wholly unacceptable. But if you get out there and you decide you're going to mix it up with Dwight Howard and damn near get in a fight, that makes it wholly acceptable. In fact, I completely sign off on that. In fact, I would even say go as far as saying that's a Len Dickinson move. That's actually kind of something I would do in my one game. I'd go out there and I'd damn near fight somebody and get run and hey, see you later.
I love the John Dickinson stories, and thank you for sharing, Len, but days of John Dickinson as a high school undersized stretch five in the Sacramento area. So if you can maybe share some vignettes a little bit later about just how much you got into it underneath the basket on the floor in East Sac, West Sac, and I believe also Central Sac as a youth. But it's kind of like that hockey game we saw the other day, Steiny, where it was just a full-on brawl. When the puck drops, all the gloves got dropped, and they threw down. So Haslam clearly wanted a piece of Howard and selected that one moment. So was he hurt all year, or was he just DNP coach's decision most of the time?
It's always coach's decision. He's like a player coach for them who doesn't play. But so apparently the way it is, Dibs, is if he had not played in a game, everything would have been still intact, but he wouldn't have been credited for playing his 18th season in the NBA.
Gotcha.
But there's more of a great little jab in this story. By getting into it with Dwight Howard, they both drew technical fouls, which happened to be Dwight Howard's 16th, so he'll be suspended for a game.
Loses
Udonis
a game
Haslam. Yeah, and so he cost Dwight Howard money.
Even better. Even better. This gets a double signature of approval, Dibs.
Is it because it's Dwight Howard? Is he, if you were, you know, if John Dickinson has six fouls to commit across the league, is he one of the guys who draws one of your six?
Dwight Howard would be up there. Yeah, Dwight Howard would absolutely be up there. James Johnson would be up there as well.
Be careful.
And yeah, I know. Be careful. MMA guy. Yeah, yeah. Be careful. I'd be coming at James Johnson with all the smoke. If I were an NBA player.
Yeah, let's you know what? I think that's a hell of a topic. 888-957-9570. I want to know who is on your Mount Rushmore of the guy you want to hard foul the most. If you could hard foul four NBA players, and they would be on your Mount hard foul more, not they give hard fouls, you want to give them a hard foul. 888-957-9570. Who are the four players you would love to give a hard foul to?
Steiny, to that point, that beef with Udonis Haslam and Dwight Howard goes back to the finals last year when Dwight Howard had that hard foul when he was on the Lakers against Bam Adebayo. So that was stemming for a long time, I'm sure.
Great knowledge. Great knowledge from Joe Spadoni there. I'm trying to think. I'm going to make my list. We can talk about it after we get Eric Hasseltine on there. But I like that. Dibs, any quick ones come to mind for you, or you need a little time to think about it?
James Harden is certainly one okay. for me. He's going to throw his head back and go down anyway, even once I get near him. So I might as well get a pound of flesh while I'm committing the foul.
All right. James Harden.
And the first one for me is Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield would be the first one. I just, you know, doesn't do much except kind of fly around and not defend and shoot threes and cast off and thinks he's just damn good. Man, like that guy thinks he's like, I think, borderline Steph Curry. I'd just knock his block off and be like, dude, you ain't anything.
Nice.
You're a freaking loser, Buddy Hield. I'd stand over him too after I knocked him down. That's
look
the first
at you.
Guy.
Like Bazemore, you would have done him like Bazemore did Jay Crowder.
Yeah, probably actually.
And
yeah.
This is a guy, Dibs, who in real life, this ain't fiction, once fouled Matt Barnes very hard in a high school game and got. Did you get a flagrant for that?
No, but we exchanged B word. We both called each other the B word.
Brother.
Afterward. Yeah, brother.
Hey, brother.
Brethren.
I like
yeah.
that.
Hey, nothing easy, as the great Zaza Pachulia once said. You're not going to dunk in my gym.
Nothing easy. I like that. I like that. I'm trying to think who would be some of mine. I may need a little time to think about who I would hard foul.
Patrick Beverly's got to be up there.
Yeah, Patrick Beverly a little bit for sure. You know what? This guy's been around the NBA for a while. We could ask him. He's a little more diplomatic than us, but so maybe he won't answer. But welcome in Eric Hasseltine. He is the radio play-by-play voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, Warriors and Grizzlies in a monster game on Sunday to determine who is the 8th seed. And we called Eric to give us some info on the Grizzlies because they've been an under-the-radar team. But first, hey, Eric, welcome. But we're talking
Thanks.
About... What NBA player would you like to hard foul the most, if you could?
Oh, Patrick Beverley's a good one.
Yeah.
He's a good one. I respect him a ton because of how hard he worked to get into the league. But then the antics sometimes to me, we had a game with the Clippers last year, and Patrick wasn't playing. Kyle Anderson after a whistle, took a shot, and Beverly came from behind off the bench in street clothes and took a swipe at the shot. And I thought to myself, you know, if he had missed, and hit Anderson's thumb or done something that could have hurt him. That's just really stupid. You know, that's not even, you know, that whole Kevin Garnett blocked a shot after the whistle thing, that's taking it too far. But he's a heck of a player. So, hard foul, yeah, wow. No, I'm not diplomatic. I would tell you if I had thought of somebody.
It used to I be love it.
Nurkic, but he's actually toned it down since his rookie year. There was a game in Denver where, and I blame Darrell Arthur, the former Grizzly, who was then with the Nuggets, for gassing up Nurkic to tell him that, hey, Marc Gasol can't stay with you. Marc Gasol can't stay with you. You're the real all-star. And Nurkic was running his mouth from the opening tip to the end of the ball game, which ended up being a really bad idea because Mark pretty much kicked his butt the next three times we played him. So that's kind of how those things tend to work. I would say, oof, man, you guys are putting me on the spot here. Give me a second to think about
it. Yeah, let's get to the Grizzlies, Dibs.
Yeah, there's not a ton of bad guys out there, but there's a few, and I think Beverly's right at the top of that list, so it may end up staying there.
I like it, though, and we'll put that in the cap early, and you have the right to switch it up a little bit later. Before we go 4-1-1 on the Grizz, where would Draymond Green fall among Memphis fans on that list? What's the perception of Draymond outside of our precious little bubble here in the Bay?
They respect him. I think there's a lot of Grizzlies fans that are disappointed they didn't draft him. A lot of people were pushing for him. I think that year the Grizzlies had the 22nd pick and elected to go with a 6'6", one-and-done point guard out of Washington named Tony Roten. And, you know, Zach Randolph was pushing for Draymond to come to Memphis because of the Michigan State ties. And he seemed to fit everything we did at that time. I don't know that he would have become the Draymond Green he is now here, because I think that style that Steve Kerr played really opened up his game and allowed him to play free, to be aggressive on the defensive end, to rebound, to bring the ball up, and the unselfish nature of it. You know, we were a grind it out, give it to Zach, give it the high pick and roll with Mark offense that didn't maximize possessions the way Golden State did. So, you know, there's the perception that a lot of people felt like the year Mike Conley had the broken face, that Draymond gave him a cheap shot, and people still haven't forgotten that. I didn't necessarily see it that way, to be honest with you. I think Draymond just plays hard, and it was an unfortunate situation. But I've never known, in my opinion, Draymond to be a guy that would intentionally take a cheap shot at someone to hurt him. So I think people respect him because that's the way this city is. They're a lot like the way he plays, tough, gritty, maximize everything you have to become really successful. And so I think he has a Memphis attitude to him, or at least the people here perceive that. So I think there's a lot of respect. They won't admit that because he's an opponent, but when it's all said and done, I think if you talk about cities that probably have the most respect for Draymond Green overall, I think Memphis would fall right up there.
Eric, a big topic of discussion around here is what the Warriors are going to do tonight in the meaningless game now against the Pelicans. Steph, Draymond, Wiggins, all questionable. I think there's a thought that they're not going to play tonight, obviously, with everything on Sunday when the Grizzlies are in San Francisco. What's the Grizzlies' plan for tonight, in your estimation, as far as how they will play it, having to come, you know, across country and play an afternoon game to boot?
Well, if by questionable you mean that Steve Kerr has taken Steph Curry's golf clubs and said, go get them at Harding Park and stay there as long as you want, I think that's probably what's more likely to happen than Steph to set foot on the court. And I think it's the same thing with us in Memphis. And I texted one of our assistant coaches last night and said, hey, I'm ready. If I can get some minutes tonight, I'm in. If I can just get one shot attempt, I'll be on Basketball Reference forever. So I figure if I can play 15 seconds, just touch it, jack it up, sub out, I'm in, and I'll take the one day out of the 10-day contract pay for that. I'd be happy to eat up some of those available minutes for our guys. My suggestion was, how about we just charter a plane, send our you know, key contributors out to San Francisco tonight and let them head down to North Beach for a delicious meal and watch the game like everybody else. But they're, you know, they'll be here, and I just don't see anybody playing. There's no benefit to it. You know, you're competitors, but you played a hard game last night. You had to dig in to beat an undermanned Kings team who just quite honestly played really well. Justin James played terrific, and the Grizzlies, they weren't bad. They just made some mistakes, maybe a little too lackadaisical with their focus at times, and then allowed Sacramento to stick around. But, you know, they locked in late and came back. So I think both teams are going to go through the same thing. It's an early start Sunday. You want your best players to be ready because having the eighth seed matters. Yeah, you have to go on the road for that first game, but you have to be beaten twice. And even if you're the 9 and hosting, you now have to win 2 games, and you're playing high-level teams. San Antonio's playing great basketball. Memphis has been playing great basketball. Golden State's obviously playing great basketball with the wins they've had. And, you know, the wild card becomes, what are the Lakers, if they're the 7, look like? If Portland falls to the 7, you know they're playing really well. So it's going to be fun. There's no doubt about it. So I think Steve Kerr and Taylor Jenkins, who know each other very well, the San Antonio connection is still there. You know, Kerr having played there, but very close with Greg Popovich, and Taylor Jenkins cutting his teeth as a young coach in that organization. I'm sure they've probably thought about it in similar terms of what would Greg Popovich do? And the answer would be DNP, nowhere near the building.
Yeah,
that would be the way to do it.
No doubt. Eric Hasseltine joining us. He's the radio voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. Eric, you know, we all know about Ja Morant on the Grizzlies. Who would you say is their second most important player?
Jonas Valanciunas. I mean, it's as good as Kyle Anderson has been this year for them, and it's a career year for Kyle, and he's finally healthy, and he's gotten rid of the hitch in his shot, and now he's actually making threes where you can't just leave him alone. And he's been terrific, and it's a weird dynamic when you guys watch Kyle Anderson. You're like, his nickname is Slow Mo, and it there's never been a more apropos nickname for a player than Kyle Anderson, because it literally looks like he's going in slow motion. He takes these long strides, and his defense is sensational with his wingspan. Dylan Brooks, his defense is terrific, and he can score when he gets in the rhythm of the offense. He had 30 last night, but Jonas Valanciunas in the middle has been massive for the Grizzlies all season long. He's pushing 50 double-doubles. He was averaging close to 14 rebounds a game for most of the second half of the season. Then he had a couple of he had a concussion, so he missed a couple of games and didn't play as many minutes. But when he gets going on the interior, for example, last night, the Kings just didn't have anybody to match up with him. Grizzlies needed a bucket. Jonas went right to the rim, got a dunk, then went to the rim, got an and one, and all of a sudden you're going, how do we stop this guy? He's 7 feet tall. He's 265 pounds. And he moves a lot better than people realize. I've watched him in practice, and I go, my gosh, this guy can actually really get around the court like a 6'8" guy at times. You know, he's kind of the throwback guy on this roster that's playing more like the Warriors, kind of in the style I give credit to the Warriors for inventing, the spread it out, move the ball around, make the extra pass, have guys that can knock down threes. That everybody's playing. The Grizzlies have adopted that, and they've gotten in the top 10 in the league in pace, and they're making more threes this year than I've ever seen them make. And they still have that ability, though, if they need to just go get a bucket at down low, and there's not, and a team wants to go small, you're going to have a problem matching up with Jonas. And the danger becomes trading threes for two. But when you can get a two pretty much any time, if someone doesn't put a big out there, then you'll take your chances sometimes. So I'd say it's Jonas, and the other guys are certainly as important as anybody, but Jonas is a big, big part of what the Grizzlies do.
What makes the Grizzlies vulnerable defensively? Because you look at the game log, and there's some games where it seems like the D just didn't show up that night.
Well, it's the same answer. It's Jonas's inability in the pick and roll to really extend, because he's not super athletic that way. I mean, off the dribble, he's quick, but like, he will give space in the high ball screen, and they figured out a way to kind of help that out. If that's getting utilized, they'll go to Xavier Tillman. But with that said, it's also inexperience. I mean, it's youth, and Dylan and Kyle Anderson, Dylan Brooks, that is, are really good defenders, but you get a Grayson Allen in there, and you get some of the other young guys in there that are trying to come together, and they haven't really had their full complement of players because Jaren Jackson Jr. had been out, Justice Winslow had been out. It's starting to get better. They went through a stretch where their defense was locked in, and it was because the same guys were taking the court every night. You knew who was in, who was out. D'Anthony Melton's a good defender, and it really kind of manifested itself into a nice run defensively, where the Grizzlies went from, I think, 15th in defensive efficiency to 3rd in a matter of 10 games. They were just locking people up. But then guys came back, you mix rotations, and all of a sudden you drop back into the 10s. So They're not bad defensively. They're actually very aggressive. They're one of the better teams, if not the best team in the league, at creating steals. They were number one for most of the year, and that's because they play aggressively. Getting Jaren Jackson Jr. back helps them play a little more aggressively because you have another rim protector. But the thing that has hurt the Grizzlies this season has been high ball screens and then rotations on the perimeter at times, leaving guys, the wrong guys, open to shoot. Right. You know, obviously no one in their right mind would ever leave Steph Curry open. But if you go back to that first game against the Warriors, you know, Jordan Poole had it rolling. And the Grizzlies continued to help off of him. And it's like, hey, at some point you got to realize that guy's got the hot hand and you can't leave him. And that's where the inexperience comes in. And, you know, I work on the broadcast with Elliot Perry, who played with the Suns and a whole herd of other teams, and he would just shake his head. He's like, man, if that was us, Chuck Barkley would just go out and hip-check that guy and not let him get another shot up. And if anybody didn't defend him, he'd hip-check his own player. And I was like, yeah, I believe Charles would do that. So they're just learning that. They're actually a pretty resilient group. But I think sometimes they get caught roster-watching. Thinking like last night, okay, Sacramento doesn't have their main guys.
Right.
We'll be fine. And Justin James hangs a career high 31 and looks very efficient in doing it. And going to Detroit when they were really undermanned and not really locking in and kind of playing lackluster, having a 20-point lead against Orlando and kind of letting their foot off the gas and saying, these guys don't have the horses to run that race. And then Cole Anthony hits a game winner. It's happened multiple times. I think it happened a little bit in the first game with the Warriors, where they didn't give the Warriors reserves the proper respect because Steph was out of that ball game, and Jordan Poole lit him up. Wiggins hit him for a career high. Kevon Looney in that game was massive. Then the second game, when Kevon Looney went out and the Grizzlies had locked in a little bit, it was a different story. So, you've got to, I think you guys would understand this, and that was one of the great things about the, you know, the Warrior teams that were, you know, from a couple of years ago, and they certainly, once they get healthy, could potentially get back towards that. But they never took a night off. Like, you'd see them, and if you were down 12 to them, they wanted you down 24. They were acting right, like they were down 12. I distinctly remember a game where they were beating the Grizzlies by, like, 25, and Draymond's diving on the floor. Steph is making extra passes. Nobody's hot-dogging it. They're pressing up, and I'm like, dude, these guys are acting like they're down 24, and I think they beat the Grizzlies that night by 40. And I was just like, that's what a championship team does. They have, you know, the smell of you're on your last legs, and they're looking for that knockout punch, and they're not going to wait for you to kind of wave the white flag. They're going to make you wave it. And that's where this team will take, in Memphis, will take their next steps as they mature and learn how to finish out games. Because to be quite honest with you guys, and I don't mean it disrespectfully to Golden State, the Grizzlies shouldn't have to worry. Are in a position where they shouldn't have had to worry about Sunday. They've given away, we counted last night, 6 or 7 games where they've kind of just eased off the gas and let go of the throttle or gone in with the wrong mindset. And you can accept that 1 or 2 or 3 games in a season. 6 or 7, you go, hey, you should have had at least 3 of those, and then Sunday wouldn't have been a big deal. But that's the situation you're in, and that's what happens, you know. Go back to those years with the Denver Nuggets before they finally broke through. They missed the playoffs by 1 game, I think 2 or 3 years in a row. How many games did they look back on and go, hey, we had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, and because we thought we had it wrapped up and this other team ramped it up, we lost that game, and now we're sitting home watching while everybody else is playing. And that's part of this league, and I it's one of the great things about it, because if you don't respect your opponent, you're going to be in real trouble. And the way the skills are of these young players that are coming in, you may not know their name, but the general manager of their franchise didn't give him a jersey because he thought he was a nice guy. It's because he can play basketball at a very high level.
Yeah, we're looking forward to Sunday's game. Thanks for your time, Eric. Really appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Guys, I appreciate it, and I miss being able to travel back home to the Bay Area, but it should be a lot of fun Sunday, so hopefully we'll see a great game.
All righty, that's Eric Hasseltine. He's the radio voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. And, you know, guys, it's interesting. And I wonder if in a way, every play-by-play guy or writer or fan thinks that about their own team, that they've given away 4 or 5 games. Because when he said that, Dibs, you know, I thought, huh, Warrior fans kind of say that too about the Charlotte game, for example, etc.
Yeah, and we didn't hear about the games that they got, some games that maybe fell in their lap or gifts that you got, and that's just the nature of a season. I'm not saying that Eric has his head in the sand. I'm not accusing him of an ostrich take. by no means. But a lot of times, human nature, you remember the ones that got away more than you remember the ones that went your way.
Yeah, every team is going to say that. I mean, the Lakers are going to say that if they wind up seventh. I mean, they had LeBron and Anthony Davis playing about 2 weeks ago, and they lost at home to Sacramento with a bunch of guys out. I mean, inexplicable. And that may wind up costing them, you know, having to play the extra game. I think Portland, if they slip, has games that they would point to. Dallas got swept by that same Sacramento team in a three-game series. So did Denver. I mean, you look at, I mean, there are levels to this at every turn as far as the seeding where somebody could say they should have been better than they wound up.
Yeah, before Eric Hasseltine came on, we were talking about hard fouls in the NBA and how rare they are, how they used to be more commonplace, and it got us all to thinking, who's the player in the NBA you would love to hard foul the most? And I've come up with my kind of Mount Rushmore, but I need some, I guess, clarification. The first guy I thought of that I'd love to hard foul is actually a retired player. Will that be okay?
Sure.
Kevin Garnett. I would love to put Kevin Garnett down. Absolutely. Give him the old Kevin McHale, Kurt Rambis thing, for sure. Spadoni's not going to like this, but I'll tell you who I'd take a shot at, too, is Caruso. He just, you know, his look, the headband, you know, Caruso. And then the next one is kind of, I'm wondering if I can get a two-for-one here on either of the Morris twins, Marcus or Markieff. I'd like to hammer them both, and if I can hit them both but only use one hard foul, I would do that.
That would be some play if they both were driving to the hoop, sharing the ball, much like they shared a space in the womb, and you come over. Nothing, JD? Nothing.
There used to be another one back in the day, laughing to the mic.
Good God.
Remember that one, Dibs?
Yeah, I do.
That's a good one.
I have honorable mention, Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen definitely deserves a clothesline. So that's my Mount Rushmore of guys.
It's crazy how you went from good old fashioned hard foul to now you're out here trying to commit felonies under the basket.
Yeah, you know, I'm old school, so my hard foul would be like the McHale D3. Rambis foul. That's all.
D3 flagrant foul was when you got confined to your dorm.
So you're not going to get anything there. I mean, you better.
You're not going to ever get anything from you.
Well, not when it's a Division III slap. Come on now. If you got to know better than that. I mean, I can meet you halfway a lot of times, but by the way, we can talk about this too. It's totally off the subject. What the hell? It's a Friday. So sometimes when I talk about playing in high school, and Dibs, you know, JD played in high school, can you refer to it as, my high school career? Or can you only have a career if you get paid for it? What do you think, JD?
Yeah, I would never do that unless I'm kind of saying it in jest.
Okay.
Like I would, if I ever say high school career, it would be kind of like my high school career. Like, yeah, I was nothing. Yeah,
gotcha.
I played, but it wasn't anything legit. So yeah, I don't know about the payment aspect of it, Dibs, but for me, I would never take my high school career that seriously.
You would if you were a 1,000-point scorer like your sometime partner Whitley Sandretto, and actually Steiny has referred to her high school career and her being a 1,000-point scorer. So this bit could be blown up in your face there, Steiner.
Well, yeah, it could. But Sandretto, I brought her up, JD, because Guru was talking smack again about Jordan Bell, and it was really annoying about how he could score off him. And I just said, you couldn't score off Whitley Sandretto. And he, of course, laughed, and I said, I'm not kidding. Yeah, she scored 1,000 in high school. I think she could probably put you away too. But I love talking about Goo behind his back, and we know he's listening, so he'll have it all chronicled.
I think they're soft.
Hey, Eric Hasseltine said something that I think is worrisome. When I asked him who their second best player is, he said, or was second most important, he said Valanciunas. That's not a good player for the Warriors in terms of position-wise, because he's 7 feet, 265, and he ain't bad, Dibs. And size can be a problem for the Warriors.
But fortunately, the majority of his action is outside the key offensively. So I think from a defensive standpoint, you'll be able to, at times, put Kevon on him. And you're going to have Draymond cover him at times. And I think you can throw bodies at him and hope that he doesn't crush you too much on the glass. One thing I've learned from last night in our league, doing it now for a couple of months, is a lot of Jonas Valanciunas, quite frankly, 23 and 15, 22 and 12, 26 and 16.
Yep.
He will go to the glass relentlessly. So who among the Warriors eight can really counteract him on the glass? Because they don't, Kevon's been doing great. I think what, three times, JD, three in a row, double digits on the glass. But this is a different animal when you're going up against 7 foot 260.
Size it matters.
It is, and I look at the first two matchups back in March on the 19th and the 20th, and you know, Valanciunas, he didn't do a lot. 4-7 in the first game, and I remember making a note in watching those two games, they didn't go to him a lot, and it almost felt like they left the Warriors off the hook a little bit. And I think the Warriors did a nice job, but I'm looking at 4-7.
See,
he did have 16 rebounds.
I thought he had a good game.
See, he had 10 points. Man. 16 rebounds, 4-7. They barely went to him, and he was 5-10 in the other game. Got to the free throw line. It did end up with 19 and 15, but a lot of it was at the free throw line.
Yeah, guy's averaging 17 points and 12.5 rebounds a game and shooting 59% from the field. And when you're, you know what? Sometimes that 59% can be mitigated because it's all putbacks and fun. But he's, when you score 17, that's pretty good, JD.
And the Warriors had Kevon Looney in the first game where they held him down more. Kevon Looney ended up going, I think, in the health and safety protocols for that second game and was unavailable. So, you know, that's when Valanciunas got going a little bit more. But even in that game, it was, they weren't really going to him. They were fouling him. Alan Smailagić actually started that second game for the Warriors in Memphis when they played without Curry, and the Grizzlies wound up beating him down the stretch.
And, you know, Jordan Bell might be a guy who can guard Valanciunas a little bit because he is longer and he's a little bit quicker. And, again, assuming that he's able to get up to speed quickly. But you might be a piecemeal approach to trying to guard him. And I wonder how much Wiggins on Ja. Wiggins will be asking the age-old question that Spadoni loves to ask all the time.
Where is Ja?
Because you got to get a hand up. Good hustle, Spadoni, putting down the lunch you were eating to get to the drop.
Yes, what a sandwich.
That was the show behind the show. That was quick.
Dibs, did you see that sandwich? That was a lunker.
He's eating a cup of soup now. He's eating a cup of noodles. He's eating some.
That's because he devoured the sandwich. Right, Spadoni? He just inhaled that thing. Good. Nice. Good for you.
Thanks to Hassle Time for taking up so much time so I can eat that sandwich.
888-957-9570. Who do you want a hard foul in the NBA? We'll talk about some of those on the other side. And we'll also get into the importance of Sunday's game. We can't stress enough how big of a game it is for the Golden State Warriors. The biggest in the history of the Chase Center by far. More to come on 95.7 The Game.